Forest Grove. And this is the Vamatatta Sutta. Vamatatta Sutta. Teaching on the forest growth. And it begins, as many of them do, thus have I heard at one time, it was during the Wasatru. Probably the Lord was saying in Sarvati and Jacob Grove in Amitabha because Mars. So that is to say, it was a land, a piece of land, which is in fact not so much a monastery as a place of living. It was the donated forest area, and it was donated by this very rich merchant called Amitabha Bhikkhu. It was called the Jeta, that was its name. near Timna, and Salati is the place, right? And in a certain forest at the Dharma Center, which had been donated by a certain number of people. And at first sight, anyway, with this discourse, you would wonder if it would help people in the household life, because it's instruction to people who are living in the homeless life, these wanderers, these, in a sense, campers, tenters that are meditating. And we might call them the professional meditators also. So there's a bit difficulty in bringing that kind of very specialized teaching into people's general, what they call daily life. But it might help you with an orientation. First of all, one of the things that it deals with is the question, why do you meditate? And I'd like to deal with that first. What is the purpose of the developing of mindfulness, meditative mindfulness? And the first thing is to that which has not been aroused, to arouse that. In this case, it means to explore and to discover new dimensions. That's the first reason for meditation. So we're going to call that. It is so difficult to everyone, in life and what you do and what you're finding. You want not just old stuff rehashed over and over again. You want to have a sense, preferably, of continuous discovery of new material of the mind, dimensions, etc. So that's the second thing. The second thing is to develop tranquility, to develop serenity in the midst of all the affairs of life. The second reason for meditation is to develop serenity. The third reason is to destroy, to bring to total destruction any defilements in your being, in your consciousness. So we can say to eradicate neuroses, to eradicate emotional and mental disturbances, to eradicate defilements, which happens through conditioning. My point is, this is the whole reason, why the spiritual life? A, or this part here, right? It's, you want to go A, into new dimensions, B, to develop tranquility or serenity, and three, to eradicate any sins to come in the being. And the fourth point that you want is the incomparable security from bondage, from the sense of being enslaved in the midst of life to the happenings, rather helpless, imprisoned in the various becomings of life. I don't have to fill in all these pieces. This is a feeling, and you know, people are in prison financially and emotionally and family life and this one and that one and the other life. You know, it's a long list. Not that necessarily any of these things are bad in themselves, but it's the helplessness with them and the sense that they're imprisoned in them. It's not the fact of having that there are children, but if the being does not have the positive new dimensions occurring, the family things and the business and the work and the work, you know, I mean, the workplace and all the rest of it tend to go to just, well, I'm imprisoned in these repetitive numbers that go over and over and over again. So it's very important to think in the spiritual life that one is developing a sense of freedom, a sense of not only go ahead, but also I am not an imprisoned being. I dealt this morning with the question of self-respect somewhat. And one of the things about self-respect is you don't feel that you have possibilities ahead of you. It all sort of fits in. So that's the fourth point. And the fifth point, which is very good for the being, but not so much as important as the other four that I just mentioned, is that there is a sufficiency, not necessarily an abundance, but a certain degree of ampleness of the necessities of life. That there is not a worry. You want to get past the worry of the over-concerned with have I or have I not, can I meet my bills or can't I? You want the freedom from worry. So we'll go through that again. Sense of new dimensions occurring. Tranquility, serenity, calm, development. The next point that you have attained purification of your being from unwholesomes, which may be lurking and may grab you one time. Overcoming of all devils, in a sense, there's no one around, they're not likely to occur, all that kind of thing. One has become the devil you from the past. And the feeling of freedom and the not being imprisoned in happenstance. And the fifth point is that there is ample at the level of the necessities of life. Fair enough? This fifth point, in terms of the monastic life, that you have sufficient robe material, monastery, lodgings, medicines for the sick, that they don't arise, that you're not, they don't arise with difficulty, that you have to spend a lot of energy to get that happening also in the midst of the spiritual life. It's too much energy. And you're now applying it to people. The necessities of life for a great number of people take too much energy. And there's nothing available for the path for your development. For the development of those other things. Creativity and serenity. You're not serene when you're worried about the necessities of life. As a matter of fact, the Buddha wouldn't teach someone until they had a meal. You know, if they had walked a long distance and they were poor and they were rather starving, and he said their mind is not settled, it's not composed enough. So they need to let go, you know, and kind of luxuriate in spiritual considerations. Oh, there's a, right? So another thing he wouldn't allow, he sat them down right down there, saw that they were fed. And after they were fed, he gave the discourse. So if any of you are hungry, you can walk off for some food. That's a point. See, your mind's distracted. You got it. I mean, the question is a point. Mind's too distracted. And, you know, oh, well, you know, you and mentally feel, you know, too much worry. So we would rather, we would prefer that to be out of the way. At least to come and play, to pay about that, you know. There's another thing that he wouldn't do, by the way, is when you have responsibility, particularly for animals. He would say, take care of, you know, because many people came were farmers. He would say, take care of your animals first. take care. No, I don't suppose you have enough humor. Take care of your children first. You know what I mean? And that worries out of the way, and that's your responsibility, by the way. And get your responsibilities out of it. Then you can be relaxed enough and composed enough to spend a bit of time with the spiritual life. But he would direct people to, he would even hold up discourses until people dealt with their children or dealt with their, with the animals that they had, because they were farmers. And then he would wait and say, no, he put off the church service. What would this be in ancient, it's an ancient one. What would it be in modern times? We won't have the church service 10 o'clock, because that's when we meet the people. We'll have to milk the cows and do this and that. We'll have it at 11 or 12 o'clock. Because he wanted people to be, forget that level in a sense, their attention's not on that level, they're free to go, to go in. Can you see it? I mean, it's very simple thing. Now we turn to, that's what the holy life is for, that's what it should accomplish in your being, so you can think certain things. If creativity's not occurring, not a very spiritual life happening. Oh dear. Now, not to be very serene, and for some reason or other, my spiritual life's not being fulfilled. Purification of my being, I'm so worried and distracted about things I haven't got down to purify my being. Well, spiritual life is not being fulfilled. If I have a sense of I'm imprisoned, then the spiritual life is not occurring, because the spirit comes from wind and movement. The wind, the spirit, the wind blows where it lifts it. That's the sense of freedom. The wind blows around, especially today, apparently, very freely, with power and with energy, so on. But it may be that you're just too worried about the necessities of life. Now, I'm not making you guilty, but there are necessities of life. We need water, we still have to eat and dress. In particular, you're a teacher, you have to dress before people to a certain extent. Food has to happen, and obviously housing of some sort, whether it's a tent or whether it's a tower, something has to happen. And also medicine. Imagine you're very ill, you're worried about medicines, well then, right from the teacher on down, it may not happen. You see, it's not so much even medicines for you, but you have to be healthy in order to teach, or in order to practice the path, or to study the path, or whatever it is. Now, considering that, he gave certain directions to the order. He said, if you were staying, now we'll talk about the order of mendicants, so I'll talk about the wanderers or the homeless family. They've gone into a forest or they've gone into a jungle, away from the cities, paint the picture, and they're trying to get out of the spiritual life. And he gave an additional instruction. If you are not making progress in that place, move on. If you're in a place where you spend too much time worrying about the necessities, move on. We talk about environments. If you're in a place which is conducive to your practice, an environment that's conducive to your practice, stay there. Even if you're having difficulties with the necessities of life. A good environment takes priority in your life. If you, obviously, if you're in a place where you get help, in addition to a good environment, help with the necessities of life. For example, the people are supporting you, but they are a little difficult to deal with, you stay there. And you take the flak from them. and the various abusers, the same in the sex, because if you develop, if you can have the patience to take that, I'm getting to the last one first in a sense, I mean, the point which is not really mentioned here is the additional thing of the bodhisattva, which is implied, as you go deeper in the path. All your work is for the benefit of beings. In order for you to unfold, however, he does say you need, in addition to the points that we mentioned before, you need this supportive environment, this milieu divin, the divine milieu. If it is not occurring, he said, now this is an address to the professional monk, huh? If you go to a place, if you go to a forest dwell, let it be a symbol, and for some reason or other it has bad vibrations, get out that night. Don't stay, don't linger, like Christ, right? He said to his disciples, shake the dust of that place, of that village, that town, or that city, whatever it is, and walk off. The environment. He said, if there's any wild animals there, you can wait till the morning, because they might get you in the dark. So he allowed you, I mean, the professional order, a day's grace. Amen. So what happens with that? Well, you determine very quickly whether a place helps you or doesn't help you. If you took it in regard to sincere aspirants who are living in the world, how would you interpret it? Well, first of all, don't waste so much time. I mean, if an environment's bad for you, make an effort to get out of it as quickly as possible. Physical environment. You know, it's polluted, there's pollution, there are various things, huh? It's too noisy. Too maybe bad odor, bad lighting. There are all sorts of possibilities. But the environment is not conducive to the path. Don't try to stay there and hack it and stick it out and be masochistic that way. Think of your mind moving towards, I really ought to make an effort to get a meditational environment as soon as possible. An environment, not so much for meditation, where I can feel creative, where I can be more serene, where I could be more pure, for that matter, where I could be freer from the defilements, etc. I can cultivate a sense of space and freedom. Even at the expense of some of the necessities of so-called necessities of life. I mean, what are the necessities of life? You need clothing, you need food, you need lodging, and you need medicine. Those are the four prerequisites. If that is covered, you don't necessarily have to think further than that. Just sufficient to develop the path. Now, we'd like you to have more abundance, that's fine. But I'm saying, if an environment gives you that common sort of foundation, basic stuff, stick with, get to that place, and stick with it. If you're in a bad environment, and it's very difficult for your necessities of life, well, obviously, get out of it. Don't waste so much of your lifetime trying to, you know what I mean? Deal with it. Deal with a bad environment. Deal with getting necessities of life. It isn't worth it. Time a wasting. Okay. Even if you get the necessities of life and you have a bad environment to practice or to develop in, and it doesn't help you with a sense of freedom and non-worry and, you know what I mean, and calm, get out of it. Even if you have enough money, I put it in simple terms because everybody is so crude. money. Even if a place is giving you money, but it's a bad environment, and every other level stops you from development, get out of it. Now we'll go over to the positive. Good environment equals but. Good environment is very important. If you've got a good environment, stick with it. Even if it's not brilliant with the necessities of life. That's what this discourse is about. And if you have a good environment and you do have the necessities of life, be prepared to take a bit of flack. That's all right. You can soldier on with that one. Do you understand what I'm saying? And of course, you don't expect every day to be brilliant. You don't expect people to respect you all the time. You know, cossets. You don't get your cossets all the time. Occasionally, you know what people are like. They're difficult. They're not you. It's very easy and nice to get along with, but people are not so nice sometimes to get along with. But they may support you at material levels, maybe a husband, a wife, and so on. And some other states they may help with. But occasionally, you must expect that others don't quite appreciate you the way you obviously ought to be appreciated. In other words, the Buddha said, stick with it. The environment's good. What's actually happening? You have a sense, I am making progress. I really am making progress in school. Don't let little setbacks upset you, that you lose a good environment and you lose good necessities of being provided for you. And that's basically the entire essence of the discourse of the forest girl. What else can be said? Well, this concludes. Thus spoke the Blessed One, delighted. These wanderers rejoice in what had been said. And that's the discourse on the forest world, the seventh, actually, seventh discourse on the forest world. We don't know where the other six are. But there are others. So, that's it. Maybe you're all happy? Very straightforward. And for you to work it out, it's your salvation. You know, work out your salvation with diligence. What can you do about it? I'm just in front of you. Well, now begin to ponder. Part of your environment is, if you have very bad people, they're part of the environment. The Buddha says in the Mangala Sutta, not to associate with fools. It's a great blessing if you learn to break that one. Look, these people, let's put it in simple language, these people bring me down and they lead me astray. You know what I mean? They put that pressure on, you know, that emotional blackmail to do the things which are not correct. You stop it as part of your environment. If a person, however, is not bringing you down, in fact, they're in fact supportive in a way, take a bit of flack from him. But sort it out. If you're going to just sort of sit down and think, and this is why I get so concerned about the Dharma Center in Kinmo. Did you hear me? Why? Because it's supposed to be an environment for people of refuge. Not that the people there indulge themselves to the point where the person loses. People who come lose creativity, possibly lose serenity, don't feel the sense of freedom, don't feel that their defilements, in fact, maybe sometimes their defilements are increasing, by getting embroiled in morning, heavy numbers. And certainly, I hope that the Dharma Center doesn't give them that feeling we can't afford to go there. That needs to be said too. That's under the necessity of life. Ideally, what we would like for the Dharma Center is, and not a price tag on everything, but that people who genuinely want to unfold are free to go there and cover, you know what I mean, the bare necessities to exist for the path and get on with it. And not feel they have to worry about the financial level. Because that puts a block on the spiritual development. Now we know that, but you're in the midst of a pragmatic. think someone who possibly hasn't got much to get by with has to be sort of encouraged to feel that they can go there. And hopefully just sort of live in a kind of the Lord will provide kind of thing, and hope that other people will pick up the slack for them. We live in a pragmatic world too. But it's a feeling that you have to remove. And give a sense of freedom to the being. It's very important point. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was there any way that sometimes people could have that would be given to the doctor
for now? Well, I think they do have it, but people don't trust it. You see, anything happening at the Dharma Center, as far as I understand, I'm not responsible for the Dharma Center, the board of directors. I want to make that very, very clear. Should be only guidelines. It costs so much to house and feed and there are bills. So I think people, may I say, can know that, but there should, as far as I know, they write it out that if you cannot do that, and maybe that should be even more emphasized, if you can't do that, please come anyway. We invite you to come anyway if you're a genuine aspirant. And that feeling should be given to people. So that the criterion is of money is only a guideline and not a demand from the being. It's up to the karma. It's up to the karma of the being to work it out whether they're just flopping on others or whether they're genuinely short. Short change. What do we want? We don't want the money. We want the unfolded beings to transform the society. That's what we want. It does raise the question of with some people, not with all people who genuinely want to come, but some people who would who never think in terms of other people that there are bills. Do you understand what I mean? You don't think, well, there are bills. How do you run this place? And it, for self-respect of the being, I believe it's very important for people to give Dharma. Because when they think, I'm participating, I'm not just taking, I'm giving. Now, please take that under advice that this can mean I'm the widow's mite. I'm doing the best I can with that level. I feel that. Jesus praised, and this is Buddhism too. Jesus praised there were people who came and gave a lot of money and wealthy merchants and so on to the support of that ministry at that time. And then there was someone else who was just a widow. She came up and she put in the temple coffers 2 pence. And Jesus praised because that was more sacrifice actually for her than other people who would just toss off this amount and all the rest of it. So I think teaching about money should be given. The order and the... If it could work, the Dharma Center should work only on Dharma. As in pure theory, should work only on gifts. Therefore, they can never charge anything. They can suggest discreetly, reverently, respectfully to beings as a layout. This is approximately what it costs to feed and house beings. And put it as a question, what can you do? Not, you can't attend this course because it costs X number of dollars. Yes, but it's not there. It should not be. I mean, please, I'm not that directly involved. I'm guiltless. I'm really truly out of it. I goes on what they do, but I thought that it was written out fairly clearly, and you can at least draw the attention to the thing, to the paragraph that says, if you haven't got it for some reason, do the best you can, that's all. The principle of Dana, which is free giving, transcends and impure. If you practice according to the East, you know what I mean? Practice according to the East, you do not say this course costs so much. You can only say we would like to raise this much per person. So now I want to tell you, myself, this person, okay, I give courses. I never get the theoretic amount that if you counted the heads of beans, you know what they suggested? You know, 30 people meditate, and they suggest an amount, let's say whatever it is, and it's $100 per head. It never works out that way, because of other people in the order. There are people who simply haven't got it because they maybe have the children responsibilities, etc. The guidelines are not met. And this is not, I'm just saying fact, and I'm sure for the Dharma Center the guidelines are not met. There are people who come forth and behind the scenes fill in. This is the actuality. So please don't think that either I or the Dharma Center get if you just sort of sat down and said, oh, so many people came and they think, oh, gee, everything's hunky-dory. It doesn't work like that. There are quite a number of people who take correct advantage of there isn't a bill. And some people, some people trade on it. People are all sorts of numbers. But does that help you a bit? Does that help you a bit? If you see some guideline which is something or other, you can, if you're good-hearted, ignore it. I wish they'd stress that. And possibly they do. But people have a great deal of distrust, I think, at the money level anyway. And, you know, they're likely to ascribe motivations to the board and to the technical staff, which aren't actually there. But they say, oh, I haven't got it, and they feel guilty. It's not the money you've got to have, it's the good heart for development. Put that in the box. However, it is very important, extremely important, a point which you cannot ignore, that you must be a giver rather than just a taker. That's the beginning of maturity and liberation. I feel good. I don't necessarily have money, but I feel I give worth, or I give energy, or I give you understand, support to people, or I move a few plates around, or you know what I mean. And I just don't come and be, you know, that little shop of horrors. I sometimes see the Dharma Center as a little shop of horrors, you know. You know that one? Who's seen it? You know what I mean? You haven't seen it? Oh, you've got to see it. These flowers, they keep growing and growing and growing. Feed me. All the little flowers in the room, you know. But, of course, the point is, you wouldn't be able to digest the food unless you felt that you were feeding. In some way or other, you feel at home with that. Unfortunately, people have a lot of guilt about money. Bear that in mind. It's a very difficult area for people. They worry. And that's what I'm pointing out. You've got to transcend it. You've got to drop the worry about money. Jesus, again, take no thought for the moral. Don't get so hep up about the money level. And in your attendance, whether you've got it or you haven't got it. Right? I just speak personally. I only worry if someone doesn't give. I worry for them. Can you hear that? Not the amount, but I just wonder. And I certainly would wonder if someone had a lot of money and didn't give. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you if you were, you knew someone who was very wealthy? And by the way, I'd like to point out that the wealthy people are extremely stingy. Very frequently are very stingy. How do you think that ought to be done? I went on the opera. I went on the opera and I'll share these ideas with you. Maybe you'll stay around where my mind is. That might help you. I went on the alms route in Sri Lanka. And you know the down are the Tamils. You know that. You know there's a sort of revolt happening. And the Tamils have a revolutionary army or whatever they're trying to do. But the Tamils are the down people and the Sinhalese are the up people in Sri Lanka. And I went on the alms route and I did receive food from Sri Lankans in prosperous houses through the alms store, going through the village. Then I got to the other side of the village, and well, the alms bowl's not full, and I'm not supposed to have it overflowing, so I'll go back. This time I was going back, a Tamil woman, who was relatively poor, actually, very, very poor, very simply dressed, a very simple style. Oh, and there's no money around, right? Barefoot children, you know, running around, naked children running around in the mud in the house, which wasn't too glorious, and all the rest of it, you know. And very obviously, you knew in the moment, this woman was just, in a sense, barely surviving and getting by. And she motioned to give. She wanted to give. Place in the oxfold. And she only had rice to give. Didn't have, you know, fine meats and viands, although mostly we give vegetarian food. So she didn't have any of the fine things, but she had a lot of rice. And she started to pack the bowl. And she packed and she packed and she packed and she packed the bowl. So it was like, he got... In her, she was the most generous person in regard to what she had, the ratio of what she had. And the food was dripping over the side, and you're not supposed to do that. Bad monk. Right? So, having that, and I kept saying, tika, tika. Tika, tika, which is, you know, not stress when you repeat a word, it means little, little, means little. You know, I'm like, well, so anyway, she smiled, she went off packing the bowl, and it's over. So I had to go back to the monastery with this bowl. I mean, this space was amazing. And they're big bowls, right? I was obviously really something greedy. I don't know if I was converting merit or just indulging in greed, apparently. And I go back to the monastery, and the abbot called me in. And he said, are you aware of the rule that you're not supposed to have a bowl like that? Amma Bhante, probably yes, kind of a sermon. Oh. Well, it's an infraction of the rule. I said, I did not do it consciously. It was, not I. Very Buddhist answer. Not I. You see, but I was called on a man for it. And then I did an explanation that because of the language, etc., etc., and the woman not knowing the rule, right? She didn't break the rule. I didn't break the rule. But in my experience, it is the upper ratio, it's the people who haven't got who are the most generous. And the people who do have, well, that's how they got to have. I think that's basically what it is. I've seen people, and I've seen a change in their life. I've seen people around the Dharma Center, as soon as they became financially wealthy, depart. Just go off into the woodwork. You know, drop any respect or any appreciation for the teaching that they received. They just got the money, they got lucky, and away they went. And that's the last we've heard of them. Sold this event. An apartment, a house, about 100, 200,000, and so on. What do they take off for? To do meditation? As you develop new creative dimensions, well, maybe. As you develop serenity, no. To develop liberation from defilements, no. To develop a sense of, well, I guess a sense of freedom, if you consider it, like taking off to, say, Mexico and smoking pot, freedom. Right? You know? To give up the whole idea of the whole life. So I guess one of the motivations for the holy life is also poverty. The Buddha said, you know, one of the in life, if you get too rich, you lack motivation. If you're too poor, you lack opportunity. Somewhere in the middle way, there's a possibility. So that's what it is. Maybe you're wrong, happy. I will share this personal ideas with you. Okay? Did you record any of this today?
I did, sir. If you want, I'll erase the meeting.
Oh, no. I don't want to erase. Why not? It's a statement of truth.